Blog Talk Radio.
Peace be on our noble and honorable listening audience. You're listening once again to another edition of Religion Means Alive. I'm your host, Imam Alfred. I'm the host of Religion Means Alive, and we are expecting momentarily our dear brother and dear friend, Brother Imam Yusuf Abdul Salam from the great city of Charlotte, North Carolina. I want to announce to the public that Imam Alfred Muhammad of Religion Means Alive will be holding the meeting, particularly for African American men. That meeting will be at 8710 West St. George Avenue every third Sunday. Please pass the word that the meeting will be every third Sunday at 710 West St. George Avenue. I have been asked by people, they said, Brother Imam, you're out, you're running, you're going around the country, but you've forgotten your own neighborhood. And charity starts at home, it spreads abroad. And I've been going around helping people. I'm always going to help the mosque here because I didn't know anything about the mosque until Imam Wardeen Muhammad taught me. I didn't even know what a mosque was. I knew what a temple was. I certainly knew nothing about African-American life in a systemic way, even though I knew a plethora of episodic events of African-American life. I had no systemic spiritual connection until the coming of Imam. Secondly, I didn't know anything about Al-Islam and its purpose until Imam Muhammad came along. I really didn't know any real things about politics when Imam Muhammad came along. I didn't even know anything about societies and building civilizations until he came along. So I am absolutely indebted to Imam Muhammad in his ministry. And I'm going to tell you what he said. He said, May the 31st, 2008, at a Memorial Day gathering, a sister was wise enough to ask him the question, Brother Imam, what happens if something happens to you? He said, you get a young man just like me. And I've looked around the country. I've studied around the country. And I haven't found anybody other than Imam Wardeen Muhammad. He's not a lot younger than me. He's young enough to be my son. But I have followed him as my leader. And he's wise beyond years, and I'm convinced that Almighty God's hand is upon him. And I do my work consistent with him. God has given me a voice, and he's given me a knowledge. And I think outside of Imam Wardeen Muhammad the first and the second, I probably know more about this community than the so-called, I won't say the players, but the actual factors, because this is not about play at all. We see where we are today because we played. And to use a street expression, I think we got splayed because we played. Last 9 years, we had organized every neighborhood, every block in our neighborhood, we wouldn't be where we are today. We didn't do it. So we have to ask Allah for forgiveness and mercy. And some of us are still not waking up, despite programs going on around the country to divide our people. Sunday, December the 18th at 2 p.m., United Men's Meeting, first program, taking charge of our responsibility to our community. Imam Alfred Muhammad, Mayor Wayne Smith, he will be there with us. We expect others to be there, perhaps the Mayor of Mount Vernon, Linden would be there. We may even have a Mayor of Mount Vernon. But we're going to be taking this around in a circuit. The second phase of the program is creating productive, safe, and strong communities. We're going to continuously work every neighbor we can find from Rio de Janeiro to Halifax, Nova Scotia. They're going to think I'm running for President of the United States. And they might just draft me to be the President of the United States in 2020. I'm telling you, 2020 is a vision year. They may say, yeah, Imam Alfred, I know you got spots and blemishes. I know you're like Lazarus. I know you suffer from leprosy, social and and behavioral leprosy. But we want you to be the leader. And if they nominate me, I would accept. And I believe I could bring America to be that shining hill on that shining city on the hill. I'm convinced of what Allah has given me through Imam Wahdi Muhammad. I didn't get this on my own. I've gotten it by being a diligent follower before I was a student. That means I followed things and didn't understand it. Whatever he said about people, I followed it. As I followed it, maybe he said it in 2005, I followed it. Come 2010, 2012, he was gone. And the same thing he said held true, because God had given him a peep into the future. As God always gives, send messengers to us. They're not called messengers, they're not prophets. They're just human beings. And God puts that in each and every one. I thank our beloved, honorable, and noble brothers I've grown to love because I've worked with him. And I hope he loves me. And I love him, and I love the great work of his family that's supporting him. We get to applaud African-American women who are supporting our husbands, who have prophetic missions. Make no mistake about it. We have prophetic missions. All one prophetic mission. We're all working together to raise up first the most despised and rejected human being on earth, that is the African-American man. And then we will raise up the African-American community. And from that community, we will shine light to the whole world, starting in America. And I believe that the man that may be Bubba, I believe that the man that might be considered a supporter of Trump, but throw his hands up and say, God has indeed spoken through this African American. God has given me a strategy to win them back. I don't care about any of them. They can put them all up, a combination thereof. God says, when I put into him my spirit, then bow down. And I'm a witness. God has put his spirit into me despite all the difficulties we face, health issues, great health challenges, great financial challenges. But ain't nothing going to stop us. And just like our freedom fighters used to say, I ain't going to let nothing turn me around. I ain't going to let poverty, I ain't going to let cancer turn me around. I ain't going to let the lack of support turn me around. I'm going to keep on marching. I'm going to keep on walking, marching up the freedom way. And we're going to march right on down to Selma and her, our brother, and our dear friend from Selma, Alabama, one of the last victory stations. Our people have not sung enough about that victory. We are becoming lamenters. But I remember some 60 years ago, you couldn't vote in Alabama. In fact, I was so scared of Alabama, I almost lost my body function going through Alabama and Mississippi. I was scared. I was terrified. But my faith held me up as I rode through the Black Belt, scared to death. I ain't going to lie to you. It was scary. Caucasian came up to tell us the direction of the car, and he looked in the car, and I was sitting in the car with a Caucasian, and I just felt a death chill. But the all-wise, truly and living God knew that I needed to stay on this planet, allowed me to stay on this planet. And I'm thankful to him. And I will continue to be thankful to him for his great works. Let us celebrate. Let us remember, we're not doing our own business. We're doing God's business. God tells us to work in his path. As long as we know we're working in the path, I don't work in the political path. I work in the path of God. So, dear people, I want to ask our brother and friend to give us an opening statement, and from there we will open the discussion and open the phone lines. I know a lot of you are listening. 805-727-7013. 805-727-7013. Feel free to call in and ask our brother and friend questions. I see a lot of you listening, so don't hesitate. One brother told me, he said, Brother Imam, and another brother called me, Reverend, he said, I just called because I don't know enough. I want to be educated. I said, Brother, you're a very honorable, noble man. When we be teaching, brother, a lot of times I don't know what the brother's saying. But my faith in God, God brings it by and by, and the sweet by and by, and I get understanding. Now, sometimes what I'm teaching, I don't understand, but I get it. Brother Imam, welcome to Religion Means Alive, and please give us an open statement and take as much time as you need to give us an open statement.
Well, let me just say good to hear your voice today, Brother Imam, and that's a statement of human relations. And you use the word love, but I like to go to our prayer rank. When we line up for prayer, we put our toes together, the extension of the soul, but we have five senses. So the kind of affection that the Creator give us is something more potent than what this world calls love. It's an affection that extends from the soul, but is not overly syrupy. It's rooted in the five senses. So certainly I love to embrace that kind of talk, but I trim it and refrain from certain language because the world got this term called tough love. But I think based upon what we know in this faith persuasion that it's not so much a tough love, but it's a love that's disciplined by common sense. And so it's a pleasure based upon that kind of common sense affection for you and all other sons and daughters of Adam that I'm present today. Let me just say, I don't have an opening statement. I've been trained to look at things as a legal analyst, follow the facts as far as they can go. And one of the things I like about appearing on this broadcast, Religion Means Alive, it brings forward the principle of complementation. By that I mean the way you approach the conversation and the way I approach the conversation, they're different, but they complement each other. And I've always understood that. So that's why I bring a certain perspective that's somewhat different so that the conversation can be rooted in a pair, and creation is created in pairs. It's only the Creator, as we both know, that exists alone. So I don't want to start with a declaratory statement. I would like to raise an issue, an inquiry or a query that's bubbling over in my soul, because no reality, no matter how stable it seems, is permanent. The only reality that's permanent is the Creator. So we have to constantly do ourselves justice by looking at reality as it changes, sometimes drastically, sometimes in a way that's reactionary, radical, or leftist radical, but sometimes it changes. And we have to adapt. But in order to adapt, we have to be very adept at staying on top of the rapidly changing order. So one of the things that I'm more concerned about today is just a human being. It's whether the sacred life can continue to bloom in a womb that's rapidly, that's quickly changing into a tomb. Now, that may sound pessimistic, but the structure, the rattling of the structure that I'm perceiving in America is in a much more drastic state of flux than any time in my lifetime, including the 1960s, when we know that there was a tumultuous time. But the womb was not moving in a way that it was becoming a tomb, because the Imam Muhammad actually bloomed and flowered out of the 60s when he came in his leadership in 1975. So even though that was a period of tumultuous change and blatant instability, you didn't have the variable of a de-wombing and an entombing of the order. And that's what all of us must open our eyes, in my opinion, to see. Because you and I both are about fostering the sacred life, not just in the African-American community, but on this planet. And if we are alive in religion, that means we are constantly alert and vigilant, picking up trends that maybe others can't pick up. Sort of like the scientists of embryology. Bam, he could take a few seconds, the woman pregnant. The average labor may take 4 or 5 months to see any signs of pregnancy. But the pregnancy was there all along. And so we have to be very alert in picking up new developments. I just wanted to open up the remarks. I mean, if there's any questions from you or anybody else to kind of just look into that very general query, interrogatory, then fine, I'm prepared to make comments.
There was a call by Imam Muhammad some time ago, even for forming of a political party, and there was an effort after that for a group called AMPAC. Now, remember, we held a convention in Washington, maybe 20,000 people attended. You might have been in the audience. I was on the stage with Imam Muhammad. It just seemed that the leaders of Imam Muhammad's community just went to sleep. There was never a massive voter registration drive, certainly no massive voter education, and it seemed to me that one of the weaknesses in the African-American people, even the post, I've definitely got to talk about this because we're talking post-Selma. I registered quite a few people to vote in several states. But we never doubled back for voter education. And some days I'm so tired of the elections, I don't even feel like going, working 2 jobs. I've never missed an election. We've got millions of us. Misselected. I would dare say we got millions, hundreds of thousands of Muslims misselected. What have the reverends, first of all, always charity always starts at home, so I really first want to start with our imams. What went wrong in that equation that we haven't picked up what I call the post-Selma imperative? The post-Selma
Selma imperative. I think there are some imperatives that came out of that. Excuse my broken English. What happened? It seemed to be, as Eric Erickson calls it, insight and responsibility. Along with insight comes responsibility. Then I'm going to ask a follow-up with another question.
Well, briefly, our people, because of the television age, many of us was able to observe the process of making history, so to speak. Unlike during the time of the big Garvey movement, in these urban areas, that was great history. But the African-American were the majority of people who were living in the South. They didn't observe that daily. They didn't see that history being made. They may have picked up a little paper, some that floated in the area, and if they were curious, one or two may have read, or one of their relatives may have come back south, and maybe a little pocket of the movement may have hit Birmingham, Atlanta, or something. But overall, that history was not observed. Second example, the abolitionist movement. The average slave on the plantation was not sitting up there observing that. So the 60s was the first time that many of us observe our people, so-called making history. But we were not really making history. We had an input, but there were external forces shaping that history. And we never understood how to independently shape history. And the Imam told us, unless we learn how to do that, I'm going to use his exact term. He said, you will only be alive in someone else's history. And when you're only alive in someone else's history, whichever that ship, whichever direction is moved, you won't get caught up because you own the cargo, you own the ship. But you get caught up in a way that you are tag along. And what most people are not realizing, that the American ship of state is taking a super drastic turn. It is not about an election, it's about a serious systemic modification. For instance, you mentioned election. That language is obsolete now because there was no election if the intelligent apparatus of this country is saying that a foreign power, John Herschel Glenn, passed away earlier this week. The American astronaut that put us back on the map in our competition with Soviet Union or Russia. Put us back on the map. There was competition in 1962 between Russia, Soviet Union, and the United States. That's roughly about, according to my math, some 54 years ago. In the long march of history, 54 years is only a drop in the bucket of time. But the system in the ship has altered course so drastically that we don't even recognize anywhere near a state of geopolitical international affairs where there's anywhere near in this new direction any sense of enmity between the Soviet Union or Russia and the United States of America. Rather than an election, let's see what happened. The highest intelligent organization in the country, with more resources, manpower, and skill, has concluded that Russia directly deflected a democratic election in America. Not that they gave us problems. Not that they made a little noise, but they actually impacted the outcome of the election. So that was no election. That was a deflection by an outside power who used to be our enemy, so-called, a little over 50 years ago. Just collapsing maybe 30 years ago in the late 80s and early 90s of the 20th century. Imam Muhammad said God had to check them because they established a system that was rooted in the idea that there is no God, that only matter is the reality. And he said they got started in around about 1917, 1918. He dealt with this and said they lasted for maybe a good 70 years. This is what the Imam said. So the Soviet Union's so-called collapse, and here we have now them interfering and deflecting the American political process. The president-elect, rather than challenging the people who did this, is making a direct challenge to the CIA. What kind of system are we getting ready to have where the CIA is openly and blatantly challenged by the commander-in-chief? Not only that, when the African-American president called a bipartisan group of congressional people together, the most powerful man in the Senate, who once said he wanted Obama to be a one-term president, rejected any suggestion by the president that there be a bipartisan agreement to come out and condemn Russia's role in this election. Mitch McConnell, from the conservative, patriotic, hawkish party in American geopolitical scenario, refused to do it, taking partisan politics incentives over the patriotic position. That's a big change in the systemic movement. And people need to wake up. You talking about a two-party system, another party. I'm not feeling that. What I'm feeling is the system moving in a direction of a super mono-party situation. I don't want to sound extreme, but again, I'm just like that doctor looking at that woman that's pregnant. People that don't understand the science, man, can't pick it up. We have a Secretary of State position that's allegedly about to be filled. With all this controversy with Russia, the president-elect is not being deterred. Well, there's actually suggestions that there may have been treason involved in this process. What is he doing? Our top diplomat, individual by the name of Rex Tillerson, been working with ExxonMobil since he was almost a boy in his early 20s. Never been a diplomat. What's his prime claim to fame? Getting ready to pull off the biggest ordeal in the history of the world with Russia. Before President Obama came in, and because of Russia's aggressiveness, the Global Alliance put sanctions on Russia. So that deal was squashed. This man who Putin made an honorary citizen of Russia, notwithstanding with all this noise surrounding Russia, Tillerson is being brought forward as our next Secretary of State. What's going to happen? He's not going to, the gavel not going to pass all a week on January 20th before Putin and Tillerson work behind the scenes to pull this deal off, but even on a bigger level. So what's happening in the systemic order? Well, those kinds of things are happening blatantly in disregard to what this system's supposed to be about on paper. It sounds to me that the woman, this open America, has always been imperfect. But if you will allow, if you tried to do your thing in human excellence, there was always an environment where that life could go. A man can do this without having the rings of power with the CIA. All kinds of fake news as a business is developing in this system. Where do we find out the truth, brother, ma'am? All kinds of fake news. That's the new order today. So how do we know what's up and what's down? The fourth estate is very important. Even a weak jive press is better than a situation where every day in some kind of high, energized, brave new society, a 1984 kind of thing, where the only information we're getting is fake. And you got a man that's in charge of all the governmental agencies that refuse to have any transparency. So what can you possibly have going out of that? A one-party monostate controlled by the plutocrats, all these billionaires he's appointing in a semi-military junta, generals everywhere. That kind of environment is not good for the development of the sacred life. And we have to understand that, and we have to be prepared for it, and we must take measures, we must adopt strategies that give our life a chance to grow nevertheless, notwithstanding those weeds. So that's what I had in mind when we raised these that initial question.
Yeah, I'm wondering also about a unifying ideology that would take into account perhaps the concerns of persons that want to keep the social contract and also keep the a safety net, but yet at the same time are willing to keep traditional values in the country.
Well, the thing about that, let me tell you this. It's not about safety net. It's about what I saw in Alabama. Once...
I got that, but let's talk about how we move beyond that. I recognize...
What do you mean? You're trying to dictate my explanation?
No, sir. I'm not trying to dictate your explanation. I'm only...
Well, what are you talking about, brother, man? We talking.
Yes, sir. I won't follow up the question.
You want me to go along with this rosy scenario and be irresponsible and not try to inform the people the facts and information? That's censorship.
Oh, sir, I'm not censoring you. Okay, I'm sorry you interpreted it that way.
I mean, what are you talking about, damn a good brother? Talking about move on, I couldn't get a statement out my mouth.
I didn't intend it. Continue, sir.
No, look, my brother. All I'm saying is I understand we want to try to work to establish this deen in the mission of Imam Muhammad. But we can't do that at the expense of ignoring reality.
Yeah,
I'm picking up with that kind of approach, that you don't want the people to be informed of these realities.
No, sir, I want to be informed, but I also want to present hope. And I'm not here trying to present the deen. I'm here to try to present a public ideology that Christians, Jews, Muslims, and even people don't have any faith can latch on to as a counterweight to what we see happening.
Well, but what I'm describing is not worse than slavery, and our people kept our hope. You can keep hope in front of great odds. The people are not so vulnerable that we can't face the odds and put our faith in God. I mean, these other folk came back with a certain report, but Joshua and Caleb saw all that and saw the giants. They identified the giant, but they said, we can take them. So identifying the giant, that means that there's not a message of hope. And I'm not coming on your program or any other where anybody can tell me not to point out the facts to the people behind some desire to promote an illusionary hope that's rooted in escapism.
Well, I continue, my dear brother. I'm not here to straitjacket anybody. I'm here to react and to make my own opinion. I thought we were having a discussion.
Cut me off, and then you came with your motive. You said you don't. I guess you're saying what I'm saying is too negative and it's crushing hope.
No,
but reality is past, positive and negative.
Unrealistic
positive thinking and ignore reality.
No, sir, I don't use those terminologies. Those are terminologies outside, I believe, the spirit of our religion, both religions. So those are from other religions.
Why did you make that statement about a hope, as if what I'm saying is not about hope?
I'm not characterizing what you're saying at all. I don't characterize what you're saying.
You said it was about hope, and we not. I'm just telling you, don't know how that sounds. They say, well, look, brother, we don't want that report. I want you to talk about things that give us hope.
Well, I'm sorry, misinterpret the question, and I will withdraw that question and let you continue. And maybe by asking you that question, what I'm proposing was developing an ideology. Go ahead, brother. I can't frame it any better. Go ahead.
Well, I tell you what, brother, ma'am, I'm going to bag off and chill and let you give us some hope.
No. I'm not here to give hope. I'm here to give reality and to deal with faith, my dear brother. You know, that's what we are hoping, what we are working for.
Yeah, but if you got two men together and we got all this love, you don't make statements, brother, openly in the public to undercut what the person is trying to project when that person is a guest. Now, if there's something serious, then the challenge should be made off the air, outside of the public listening. But if we're supposed to be together, and then you cut me off like that and suggesting that what I'm saying is off limits,
that's not very wise for a brother with the great knowledge and understanding you got.
Well, I don't know how to take this. I'm just saying.
I can't deal with a situation where you coming, you want to work with Mars Kev, and then you got a leadership role, and you act as if can't nobody bring up nothing that's going to differ with the prospects that in your leadership position you want to project. Oh, that's fine and good. That's good strategy. But there's a limit to that.
Well, let me just say here, brother, I want vigorous discussions. And I'm hoping as we say we make these inquiries that we won't create any oversensitivities for either one. Whatever you say, you're free to say, and whatever I say, I'm free to say. I'm not putting you down. I think that's what vigorous inquiry is, and that's what a critical inquiry. And in fact, that's what dialectics is about. It doesn't mean we're going to agree. It means that we'll have maybe thesis and antithesis, but we're hoping to reach the goal.
What I made in that opening statement, you're an intelligent man. Rather than turning the conversation in that direction, whether you agree with the specifics or not, the approach that I know you can take would have been some kind of follow-up, some kind of commentary, not a quick squashing and in the name of hope, pushing the conversation somewhere else. You know that I spent a lot of my time studying these matters. Okay, that's a unique contribution that I could make to the show and to the community. But when you start trying to freeze that, then what contribution I have other than parroting what you want me to say?
No, sir, I'm not freezing that. We invite that. I respond. Generally, I don't talk on these programs. I usually just ask questions. But I sometimes comment about things that's passionate. I feel inspired to talk about. And it's not trying to freeze. You know, I have discussions. Like, I grew up with these kinds of discussions. My dad didn't try to squash me. We had vigorous discussions. You know, I knew my dad was on his way to dying when he didn't engage me in a vigorous discussion. I got word. I said, Bob won't see him again. So I like vigorous discussion. I'm not into Tea Party parlor type discussion. One of my issues with interfaith dialogue, I heard Imam Muhammad say, well, I got it from him. He said, we always talk about what we agree on, but let's talk about what we disagree on. And that's healthy. I don't think it's good for people to disagree all the time. I'm not here to squash you. I came back with what my spirit was reacting, dealing with, not to put your ideas down. You know, and not to engage in an adversarial relationship with you.
Well, we're not engaging in an adversarial relation, and I'm listening to the comments, and there's an element of denial in your explanation. You're not really acknowledging what happened, but that's all right too. But what I'm saying is, look, we're both brethren in the struggle. I respect you and your position, okay, and I'm not going to get over in the territory of trying to dictate conversation, because then that puts strains on a relationship.
Yes, sir. Well, I don't want to. I apologize to the audience, and first to you and to the audience, if that's misinterpreted.
Well, brother, I don't feel comfortable. Now, the imam said, always be prepared to bring your best. Now, I have spent the last week trying to study this stuff, whether it's correct or incorrect. It's a good faith effort to try to bring forth the best in terms of what I can contribute to the audience today. Whether it's good, bad, or indifference, the intentions are good. But now, really, I don't feel comfortable now with doing that. Maybe next week I will, but not this afternoon.
Yes, sir, I pray you will. And I really apologize. I don't know how we end up getting where we are. But
I tell you how you made a quick interference when I was in the middle of a sentence, cut me off,
and being suggested that as an imam, I'm making statements that don't give the people hope. That's how we got here.
Yes, sir.
No, I guess, not to be argumentative, I was asking you about ideology. How do we develop an ideology? That was the question.
Brother and Imam, you know our ideology is Al-Quran. Come on now. You know what our ideology is.
That's
in the tafsir of Imam Muhammad. We don't have to develop no ideology. You know that.
No, we do. In the political arena, we have to develop
strategies. And you and I talk about strategies all the time.
If we are dealing with the public, we have to have an ideology. There are ideologists out here. We have to develop. This is not a Muslim society. The people in Indonesia, where they have a majority Muslim society, have developed an idea where everybody can buy and call Sansila.
It's called universal values.
Yeah,
America is based on universal values. The preamble, the Declaration of Independence, that's not Christian or Islamic, but it's something that we all can identify with, but it's rooted in what's contained in our belief system.
Yes, and what I was asking for is how we then, I probably should allow you to finish, how do we develop? Because I believe that there will be a new party. I'm looking beyond what we are now. I know where we are now. I don't think, I'm a very shrewd observer of society, you know. And
yeah, but that doesn't mean everybody else is. So why clamp down on exposure to information?
I'm not clamping down. I only reacted, and that's only human.
You don't want me to go there. I've been around, brother. Look, we shouldn't have to be discussing this long over there. You didn't want me to go where I was going.
I want you to say, you've discussed many things maybe I disagree with, and I allowed you to go on. I give you a free hour to talk. I don't care. I will make my
statement. You don't give me nothing. We're working on a program. Come on, brother. Don't be like this. We're working together as men.
Please forgive me and continue.
If you have any questions, Brother Ma'am, I'll answer them for the remainder of the hour. Any question you have?
Give your analysis of the current political situation. I will not follow up with any other question about that.
At this point, I just wouldn't want to do that. But there are many things we can talk about beyond the current political situation.
All right.
And that's what I would prefer to do right now.
Would you talk about the state of the Muslim community and the state of the African-American community and what needs to be done?
Well, as you told me earlier today when we talked, we need to have a revival and get back in touch with that old-time religion. And to me, that's basic. That's Muslims as well as the African-American people. You also suggested that we are too cerebral or trying to be too rational as Muslims who follow Imam Muhammad, and there's not enough intrusion of the spirit. The way our people had early on, they may not have had the high language and the conceptual sophistication, but there was a genuine, sincere spirit that was very vital in our development as a people. And to me, all of us, I agree with that statement from you. We need to get back to that good spirit.
Yes, I think we should stay with that focus. I want to know where did we go wrong? We were in a very good space, late 50s, early 60s. And it seemed to me that we just got derailed. I mean, the civil rights movement got derailed. I mean, we also said the Nation of Islam got derailed. Both movements got derailed. I don't believe it was accidental. I believe it was planned. And it was
planned because of an understanding of collective human nature. If you deny people and
the door of opportunity is open to them to a certain extent, not all the way, then there's going to be an opportunity to procure booty from relative victories as well as spoils of war. And they don't use that term spoils of war for nothing. I believe the success we had as a people and our hopes to try to take advantage of that and move forward in the system, procuring spoils of war, quite frankly, spoil the innocent spirit that characterized us generally as a people leading up to the 60s. This innocent spirit that you say we've lost, both as Muslims, as Christians, and even agnostics and atheists. If you look at how the Imam complained about the ministers in the Nation of Islam, how they have become basically materialized in their dress, their aspirations, and all of that. Well, in the 30s and the 40s, the Nation of Islam was struggling. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad was on the run. Even his family, according to the Imam, his mother leading the community, he said many times they ate chicken necks, chicken feet. That was a situation of severe deprivation. In the 50s, the community started growing, the resources developed, there were victories, and many ministers were spoiled as a result of benefiting from the early struggles of the pioneers who put so much on the line. Even the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, from 1935 roughly to the late 40s, he was in a very unstable situation in his life. He had to give up almost a decade and a half, sacrificing so that the nation could advance. Many other pioneers, Malcolm, many others, sacrificed so the nation could advance. And then Imam come into national meetings, and you know how he described how many of the ministers were dressed.
Yes,
spoiled by the spoils of war.
Yes, I do know. I do wonder, though. I don't want to name this agency. It's pretty popular now. But some of the intelligence forces, as well as Mr. Stoner, also made statements while this community was innocent, while it was growing. Mr. Stoner said he had a plan, and his plan was to flood it with nigger mob of pimps and hustlers. And I wonder if those same people that Imam Muhammad described were part of Mr. Stoner's plan, in addition to your spiritual analysis. But I think a lot of that was induced by persons that have been sent in among us from various forces and infiltrated us, and where we at because of that. Being an innocent
I agree. I agree with that. It was a devious plan, but that's all it was. There was no predetermined destiny with the working out of that plan. And when Allah, when the Creator raised up Imam Muhammad from all of that and put him front and center for over three decades, his example, his mission should have been enough for the majority of us to rally around and counteract those forces that you're talking about. That was real, and that may have been effective. I think some of that effectiveness was because it was not enough of us that supported the man that was demonstrating an outstanding character. We
Jesus would have made us sift through these kinds of leaders and run them off.
Yes, yes. I think we're on to something. I think we can agree with that. I think that that was a scheme. I mean, it was written up. I don't want to refer to it because it was a written scheme, and it really did happen. But I do think there was a sheepish mentality on our part that allowed these things to happen. And that's why I'm more serious about the people inside Imam Muhammad's community, because Imam Muhammad taught, I've been in meetings where he taught, and I'm sure you have too, 8-9 hours. I've also been in private meetings going on for 9 hours, just 9-10 people. So that's my concern. I think my perspective is always looking internally. I don't mind the external thing. That's not where my mission comes. So I didn't want you to make think that what I'm asking is I'm looking from where I've come from. And, you know, they said Joseph was told to enter the city by many gates. I don't negate people who have different views. We're supposed to have that. I mean, I think what they said, there are 12 gates of the city. I'm not sure I know what that means. But I think I'm more, my interest is more inside what happens with the heart and the spirit, what happens internally. Because if one is strong internally, very little external forces can do for you. And I just believe that you can form coalitions and overcome a lot of the stuff that we see going on. Some of us were not even aware of the schemes that were going on against us. And once the man accused me rightly, I asked him why did project I had been working on fail. And he said, you just didn't know Satan. So I take that to mean that I pay very close attention to plots and schemes. And I'm also aware of socio-political factors as well. So I'm wondering what we first as Muslim African Americans should do and what African Americans should do in light of what is going on the political scene.
First of all, we have to identify what's going on. And in the law, you don't just look at a set of facts that's new presidents. Because when you're dealing with the law, if there are cases on all fours, it's very easy to deal with the situation. It's those cases that introduce entirely new facts in the pattern that creates a lot of difficulty. But if people are superficially looking at the facts, they don't engage in the kind of process in the law where we have to distinguish, very finely any operative or material fact that changed the whole pattern and make prior decisions irrelevant to the new decision. And what I tried to suggest earlier is that there are some things that's happening right now in this order that does not have any previous presidents whatsoever, entirely new. And people can't bring the lens from the past and project that on what's developing now. Oh, this is just American political process, and this and that just happened. It's all politics. 9 times out of 10, the courts never have to reverse the case because most of the facts are on all fours, as we call it. But every now and then, there's a case that's not on all fours. And the legal scientists have to be keen enough to distinguish the facts and know the difference. And there's too many people assuming that what's happening in America is America at its normalcy, but with a strange player, Donald Trump, involved. No, it's a lot different from that.
Yes, sir, I agree with you.
So how are you going to deal with something if you don't know what you're dealing with?
Well, I'm certainly sorry we stopped you from your train of thought, and I'm sorry we had this, you know, but reasonable men would disagree, and sometimes when we are passionate, we will say inappropriate things, and I certainly said an inappropriate thing or raise an inappropriate question. I don't want to anybody to think that we are disagreeing and that I have anything but solemn, sacred respect for our beloved brother, who has been on this program for years and hope to continue with him. And we're going to continue because we love each other. We're going to continue to discuss things. Sometimes we may get heated. But don't anybody on the outside take our heated discussions for anything other than the young people call a turn-up to find solutions, firstly, to Muslim, the African-American issue. I want to make this clear. I'm about African-American issues, but I'm also about the position that I think the only people on the face of the planet Earth that's qualified to lead people is the wise followers and students of Imam Waruddin Muhammad.
There's no doubt about that, Brother Imam, but let me just say two things. There's a limit to your externality deflation in terms of potential impact on the life. I'll give you an example. I don't think none of us are going to parallel the internal situation in the souls, minds, and spirit of Prophet Muhammad and the other Muslims and believers that work with him. I just don't believe it. But they were ordered to leave a certain environment where the externalities were too difficult and heavily laden with persecution. Now, I'm not saying we're in that situation right now in America, but I am saying that that's proof positive that you could have a good situation in your soul within your group. They were organized dealing, but it was the external pressures that made the wound almost unbearable for the sacred life. Now, secondly, I'm very sensitive to hope that's almost dopey. And one of the things that men have done in religion throughout history as used interchangeably, opiastic religion, dope, and high-flung otherworldly hope. Now, I'm not saying that that was a situation when you made that statement, but I'm very sensitive to that hope that has a thin line between hope in its natural form and hope that's dope in escapism.
Yes, sir. Are you still there?
Oh, yes, sir. We don't have any need to go anywhere. We haven't formalized the ending, you know, as far as the closing of the show.
Yes, sir. Maybe there was something with the phone, I guess. Yes, sir. I understand that. I understand. I'm not guilty of Mr. Marx's accusation of an opiate. I'm into movements. I believe that you have to have a movement. One of my big issues is we have had people who have given us dope in the form of Reverend Jackson's Hope, keeping hope alive, but have done no real hardcore organizing and really raising the consciousness of people, first our moral consciousness, our ethical consciousness, and ultimately on the block organizing. I think it's a shame in 2016 there's been no hue and cry about the lack of bringing great African Americans together to develop wealth. Seen a lot of efforts in other directions, but not for us to do that. Even to have a political party, I haven't seen any effort to do that. So these are the things that are disturbing to me, and we're going to continue to work. Anything our good office can do to increase, I see more support coming to us. We hope to. Let me just, before we you give us a closing statement, we have a few more minutes, is to tell you that we do need your financial support badly. We are wanting to raise money because we want to go on regular radio to reach a more wider audience. You can send your donations to Religion Means Alive at gmail.com via PayPal. Religion Means Alive at gmail.com. Let's go to PayPal. And you can send donations. I don't think PayPal allows you to send over $1,000 if anybody in the audience there. But we desperately need your donations. We have a monthly expense we must pay. One of our enemies put out, I don't know what the brother was enemy, he's certainly an uninformed person. He's been going around telling people that the program is free. Alan Levy has not yet told me he's giving it to me for free. I hope he will. Reverend Jesse Jackson said, keep hope alive. But meanwhile, if we don't have that money, we are cut off the air. So we need donations and support. Send those donations. This is not a ministry of joking. This is a ministry of seriousness. We are very serious, to the best of our ability, to take Imam Muhammad's message to the public. We are organized. We also believe that he who doesn't have a leader has Satan for a leader, and what a horrible leader Satan is. So we are here to work to make sure that every home and our people, among our people, get the message of Imam Muhammad. We're not as concerned about other people right now. But African Americans here in America and throughout the Western Hemisphere, and I'm sure along the way, if we wake African Americans up, I tell you, my belief, the rest of America will come to us and accept us as leaders. Brother Imam, I wondered you give us a closing statement, and I enjoyed it. I apologize again for any firework or many misunderstandings of I'm having a rough day and had spoken before I should have, made a comment before I should have, and have been an impolite host. And please forgive me, and I ask the audience to forgive me, and most of all, I ask Allah to forgive me.
Let me just say, Brother Imam, you and I both know that there were bigger people than us who's had a little by in the conversation. I think about the great leader Umar and the champion human beings and some of their conversations. There was a little heat and a little disagreement, but ultimately truth prevailed in the situation. But let me just say to you and this audience that in a society that's come to the point where they say that there's no such thing as facts, when they come to the point that they say we can make up our own myths, therefore make up our own reality, dearly beloved audience, we must insist on our First Amendment right to speak the truth. It's very important that there is a remnant. You're talking about having hope that developing America that does not get caught up in this high-tech myth-making. Will everybody come under the spell of fake news and made-up stuff? A man went into a pizzeria in Washington, D.C., a man named Edgar Madison Welch, because he read some fake news put out by Donald Trump's national security director, Michael L. Flynn, and his son, Michael G. Flynn, saying that this pizzeria was a a front for Hillary Clinton child abuse ring. And this guy actually got his gun and left some state. I don't know where it was. I forget the state. Went to D.C., went in there shooting, talking about he was there to investigate this child ring. In an environment like this, where everything is being distorted, dearly beloved audience, we all have a responsibility to stick to reality. To stick to reality and not let people put our minds off somewhere in an alternative reality. As I close out, I give an example of that. 80% of Trump supporters to this day in an alternative reality believe that unemployment has gone up under President Barack Hussein Obama. Let me give you the facts. When he came in, it was 7.9. The objective fact, not a myth, is 4.6 now. They also believe the overwhelming majority that the stock market has gone down since he's been in office. When he came in office, it was 700 plus. The other day, it was over 1,900, 1,100 plus gain during his term. But they off in an alternative reality. They got plenty of hope that Trump is going to change the world for them. But everybody he's appointing has no interest for who he may have called Bubba. Nothing is going to be changed for them. Their hope is not going to be realized, but they're in an alternative reality. What I was trying to suggest to my dearly beloved brother, that look, we can't take our people off into a world of alternative reality. Let's give them the facts, no matter how distasteful they may be on the surface. So now, this is Brother Imam Yusuf Abdul-Salam. I've been in government in the Alabama State House and had much more little lively conversations than I have with Imam Alfred Muhammad. So, dearly beloved audience, don't make too much of that. What we should make much of is at the end of the broadcast, we will still be in a not-so-mellow mood. But the spirit of peace that is part of our makeup took over. So I'm so happy to have been here today, and I hope what we both share, the good, bad, and the ugly, has put us in a position, dearly beloved audience, where we do not shirk from examining fake stuff that's being brought to us. We should demand that which is real. Brother Imam, thank you for having me. Next Saturday, and if I get some money, I send them a good, strong donation. If I get some money. So
you don't send us some good, strong corn liquor,
Well, the audience ought to know when a brother starts spending his money, that means that he ain't mad about nothing. So that's why we close out with that statement.
You know what? Let me tell you, brother, I would be worried if we didn't argue. Because you know what? Imam Muhammad said, you know, the Nation of Islam used to have a pretense where we didn't argue. He said, we need to be able to go out of the room and cuss each other out. I can't even use the word. And he said, go back in and get to work. And the first time I was in a laborers' meeting, I was shocked with a young FOI to hear Raymond Sharif Captain Raymond Sharif and Secretary Abbas Rasool saying, F that, Raymond. You ain't gonna give me that. I said, wow. I said, now I know I'm in reality. I'm shocked. Grown men, they gonna argue? I saw two free Puerto Rican lawyers, the judge, Puerto Rican, the prosecutor, Puerto Rican, the defense attorney, Puerto Rican, and they were tangling. I mean, they were almost ready to fight. The judge stood up and said, Puerto Rico! He was proud that his Puerto Rican brothers, he didn't say Puerto Rican, he used the original name, had seen two Puerto Rican lawyers battling for the truth. So we got to have some of this firework. I think we've gotten too polite, too nice. And we don't have. I disagree with you, brother. I'd love to see a brother come with different views and debate. And I think that's one of the reasons the community is so dead. There is no vigorous debate. It's a satiation.
Well,
I never want anybody to know how to sleep. I got three newspapers that I'm getting ready to finish in a few minutes. And they get the New York Times 2 days of it. We're not going to stop. We're going to be continuously vigilant. And we are praying that this is not the end of these United States of America as we know it. Because I remember the day that there was the Soviet Union that no longer exists. I remember the day when there was Yugoslavia that no longer exists. I also remember the Czechoslovakia. It no longer exists. Prussia is no longer. So don't think that these United States of America can forever be united. Let's pray that they are. And let's pray that there's a correction. And let's pray that Allah intervene in our lives. And what I'm asking for is us to come up with positions where we can be prepared if they say tomorrow morning there's no government in America, that we can have President Yusuf Salam to step up and take the wheels of government, at least the Supreme Court or something. That's the way I think. So I don't want anybody to think naively that I believe Reverend Jesse Jackson's hope is always alive. I'm here to make hope. That's why I'm asking all y'all to come to the Savior's Day and come to every event the mosque has so we can have a national presence. Let's have 15, 20,000 people there. That shows the strength is very important. Let's mobilize our people. And I'm going to tell you, nothing is better than a vigilant people to counteract whatever forces that may come against us. Thank you. Or attempt to come against you. Because I believe Allah is with you. I know ain't nobody can be against you. Thank
Amen.
You, Brother Mammon.
Amen.
On our noble audience. We're going to be on tomorrow continuing this discussion. In fact, we're going to go live on Facebook, opening up a new technology. Thank you. Peace be on you. See you, Brother Mammon, next week. If you'd like to come on tomorrow, please let us know. Thank you again.
I know
the
door is always
open. You don't
sell us
a bottle of corn liquor. I'm drunk enough as it is. On post-slavery, and we appreciate you and love you. Thank you. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam.
What's going on?